kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Can you hear me okay?
You sound fantastic, actually. You sound better than my one co-host usually does.
Good to hear.
Guessing you have a decent setup over there, huh?
I actually don't. I just have like a cheap like headset with a microphone on it, but apparently it's working for me, so that's good.
Good enough. No background noise, no nothing.
Excellent.
No air conditioner or IKEA furniture being put together in the background.
Nope.
Oh, you could tell the kind of show we run here.
I understand. Yeah.
Oh, what's up, everyone? This is Joe, the SML Podcast, episode number 196. It is just me today on this one, so I have brought in a guest, so I'm not just rambling to myself. Eric Johnson of Infinite Monkeys Entertainment Limited. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm really good, thank you.
I'm happy that you could join me. It's always weird when I talk to myself, and doing it live on a broadcast usually makes me out to be crazier than I really am.
Well, it's great to be here so that you don't look quite so crazy.
So you just put out the game, Life Goes On, Done to Death, 2 weeks ago, was it?
About that, yeah.
So tell us what the game is for the people who don't know what it is and miss the show where we interviewed it. Give us the sales pitch on the game.
Right. So Life Goes On, Done to Death is a puzzle platformer where you can only progress by dying. As you're playing through the level and your character dies, you leave behind dead bodies, and any changes that you made in that life, that just all continues on. So when you summon a new character, when you summon a new knight into the level, everything has stayed the same, including the body that you left behind from the previous knight. And so that becomes your tool to solve puzzles, and that's how you make progress in the game. Our classic example for this is if you have a spike pit and you need to jump over it, but you miss the jump and you die on the spikes. When you summon your next character, that dead body is still on the spikes, and that becomes an extra platform to help you get across the spike pit.
Which is an absolute blast to just murder my players to help my other players try to live.
Yeah. So now all of those horrible deaths in video games, you know, add up to something in Life Goes On.
Indeed. Are you all guys just all sadists at Infinite Monkeys that you just wish to see people die over and over?
Honestly, I don't think we're bad people. Like, I don't know, it might come across as a pretty morbid, awful thing, but I think everyone's really like not that bad a person.
No, there's got to be someone there who's kind of off their rocker.
The evil streak? I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's just a subtle underlying thing that...
There's always one of you. Always one of you who's just completely whacked out.
Yeah, something's coming out in our work, so I don't know. I guess there's something going on there.
So where did the idea of this game come from? Like, where did you think of a platformer where you have to die to live?
Yeah. How do you end up with the idea that, like, the right way to, like, open a door is to throw a knight into a saw blade and plant the body on a button, right?
Exactly.
How does one come to find themselves working on a problem like that?
How did you get to that, and were drugs involved?
No drugs, no. Yeah, so there was a global Game Jam event. So Game Jam is typically an event where there'll be something like a fixed period of time, like a weekend or something like that, where you get a theme and you take the weekend and you make a game based on that theme, typically just for a fun kind of exercise. And so there was a local meetup for the Global Game Jam in 2012, and the theme for that event was this image of a snake eating its own tail. Yeah, you can sort of see where that's going, right? It was actually kind of funny because the organizers of the event were kind of like, we're not really crazy about the theme, but our team thought, no, that's cool, let's give it a shot, let's take a look at it. And so the snaking its own tail is called an Ouroboros, and it's like a symbol like of kind of life and death and infinity and renewal and things like that. And so we said, okay, well, how can we design gameplay? How can we make a game where playing the game is really about kind of these themes of like renewal and life and death and infinity and all that stuff? And yeah, that's sort of where the idea came from.
That's a cool way to go about getting the idea for the game.
Yeah.
So how many teams were involved with that game jam? I swear to God, every other person that we talked to on this show, their game came from a game jam.
Yeah, it's so I mean, like, there are game jams running like nonstop. The Global Game Jam is a particularly large one where it runs every year. In January, I think, and it's like an international event, and there'll be like meetups organized in cities all around the world. And I don't know, hundreds, if not thousands, of teams participate in that particular one. And there's little tiny game jams, and there's like huge ones like that. But yeah, you're right. Like, you know, a lot of games, a lot of indie games come out of game jams because you sit down, you work on a thing. You hack together a really quick prototype over the weekend, and at the end of the weekend, you've got something that might be really cool, that might seem like it's got a ton of potential. And all of a sudden, you go from this little hobby weekend project to saying, wow, I've got a project that could be a bigger game that we could release. And that's exactly what happened with us.
Nice. You said that was 2012, right?
That's right.
Have you guys just been working on that game for the past 4 years then, or have there been other games in the mix as well?
No, that's been our only game. The team, like, it's not like the team has been full-time on that for 4 years continuously or anything like that. You know, we've all been kind of balancing. Like, we didn't have a studio before this or anything like that. It was just a like group of people that met at a game jam and started working on a game. So we've been balancing this with like school and jobs and other things, and, you know, contracting, and sometimes being full-time and sometimes not, and that sort of thing.
That's cool. So you just met each other at the game jam? You didn't know each other before you went in?
We didn't know each other. Two of our team members did, but the rest of us were strangers.
Is it like in high school where you just pick sports teams and you're like, I'll pick the guy in the red shirt?
Kind of, yeah. It was just a like group of people that gathered around and said, okay, you want to work on this idea? Yeah, sure.
Like, are there any popular games that are out now that came from that same game jam?
Yeah, so the best known one, I think, are you familiar with Mushroom 11?
No, I'm not.
Mushroom 11 is this cool, it's also sort of a puzzle platformer, but it's not quite like a, it's not really a platformer in a traditional way, but you've got this green blob, and it's a PC game, I don't think they're on console, where you, yeah.
That'll explain it.
Right.
I'm a console boy through and through.
Yeah, it's this really neat concept where you've got your mouse, and you can use your cursor to kind of erase parts of the blob. And the more you erase, the more the blob will grow on like different sides.
Yeah.
And so you can like move your blob, which is your character, by like erasing its edge, and then it'll start growing on the opposite edge from where you're erasing from. And so you can sort of use it to push this blob around levels. And it's this really unique, really interesting mechanic that is kind of fun to play with. And they actually came out of that same game jam. They were based somewhere in maybe New York or something like that. But yeah, they the same 2012 Global Game Jam and the same theme inspired them to go in a very different direction and create this like growing blob thing.
I will definitely have to check that one out, because that one looks pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and my cat jumps on my lap. Hi, Potato. Yeah, I'm in a professional studio, by the way. Totally.
Yeah.
I'm not just sitting at my desk with a cat bed on it. So how do those game jams work? Like, is it just a bunch of people who get together to make a game, or are there like contests and prizes and shit like that?
Yeah, the ones that I've always participated in have been purely like hey, this is a fun thing. Let's host a game jam. And it's like just purely a like an event, because making games is interesting, and trying to cram a game into a weekend is like an interesting thing to do. There are certainly like more commercial game jam events where I think, you know, companies will like have sponsorship and prizes and that sort of thing.
So basically it's like a weekend LAN party, but instead of playing Halo or Quake, you're making games.
Yeah, you're up all night like programming or, you know, doing art or whatever.
Is it a Mountain Dew and Dorito kind of crowd, or do you guys have your own specific drinks that you enjoy?
No, I think it's pretty similar. I mean, most game developers are gamers, right? It's a pretty similar demographic.
A lot of alcohol there?
No, not in my experience. I mean, it's kind of hard to like program and make things and that sort of thing. Too much to drink. I know, at least for me personally, like a couple of beers and I'm like, I am useless at programming now.
I think our favorite conversations with people who do game jams were like, they'll have a really offbeat game. I think Starwall was one of them.
Oh yeah.
And we asked, you know, were there any, because we always ask, were there any drugs involved in this game? Because it's a fucked up concept. Why not ask? Yeah, and they said, no, it was all just exhaustion setting in.
Lack of sleep.
Yeah. Being awake 48 hours and trying to get something together. So I'm guessing a lot of exhaustion and sleep deprivation went into Life Goes On as well.
A reasonable amount, yeah. And like at the end of the weekend, like the modern Life Goes On looks so different from what we did in a weekend, of course. And it was like our original build was so buggy and so broken. And like we had these bugs where like you would try and spawn a knight and it would just blast like a fire hose of like knight ragdolls like all over the screen. And like, you know, it was like, you know, you'd put a knight on a bed of spikes and like we'd have these weird physics glitches and so the knights would like twitch and bounce around horribly, which, you know, people thought was hilarious, like, oh look, the body on the spikes is still twitching and like things like that. But yeah, so I mean it was a pretty ugly broken thing.
Are there any videos of these glitches out there?
No, not that I know of. No.
That'd be bad. Fun to watch.
Yeah.
And you gotta love crazy graphics glitches.
Yeah. It's interesting that, like, you know, there's almost like a genre for this stuff now. Like, that's almost what Goat Simulator is, right? It's like physics glitches are hilarious. Let's make a game that's just all physics glitches.
Yeah, I love the people who complain about games like Goat Simulator. Like, oh man, well, it's so buggy and the graphics glitch and there's like clipping. And it's, no shit. That's kind of the point.
That's kind of what you're buying into here. Yeah.
Did you miss the part where they tell you it's a bad game and to not buy it? Because they're very upfront about that.
It's impressive how much of a market they've managed to find by doing that.
Because seriously, and it's like it's created its own genre of just weird offbeat games that are just insane shit, like Bread Simulator. Yeah. Or no, I Am Bread, Surgeon Simulator.
Yeah, it's a whole genre for sure.
It's insane. Now you need to make the fire hose night sprayer simulator. That could be the sequel to Life Goes On.
No more of this subtlety and trying to deal with the problems one night at a time. We're just gonna fire up the fire hose of nights and brute force the levels.
I would love to see a game come out like Life Goes On, that it's the full game as it is, but just hidden in there is an Easter egg, like you put in the Konami code or something, and all those glitches just come back.
You get the like classic builds and things like that.
Yeah, that I just, that shit would just interest me so much, to see different versions of the game, different bugs of the game that have been worked out,
see how the game's evolved and that sort of thing. Yeah,
have like as low res polygons as possible, where it's just like a cone and a sphere walking across the spikes. That'd be fun.
That would be neat to see, just see the history of the game you're playing.
Man, that's a good idea. You guys should do that.
no work. Would that be really easy, right?
Clearly. It's just like you click a couple of options, right? It's like in beta mode, yes or no, and you just click yes, and it's there it is. It's all right there.
Why isn't anyone doing this already? I don't understand. Yeah.
Seriously, like I give all these good ideas on the show, and no one does them. It's like there's work involved or something. Like, come on. So I know Life Goes On, was that originally a Steam release, right?
That's right, yeah.
When did that version come out?
That came out in 2014, April 2014, so just a tiny bit over 2 years ago.
And how long have you guys been working on the PlayStation 4 version?
So we had a bit of downtime between like post release on the original Life Goes On. But at least I would say a year and a half of like, you know, like and it wasn't just a port. Like Life Goes On Done to Death is significantly larger. Like the playtime, I think, is almost doubled. There's tons of new features and updates, and like lots of extra work went into it. So it wasn't just a like, yeah, it took us a year and a half to take the Steam version and get it to the PlayStation 4. It was like, no, we put a lot more into the game over that time.
Nice. What made you guys go with PlayStation 4?
We just had some really good experiences talking with Sony, and it seemed to make sense for us. And we thought, yeah, it seems like a you know, like the platform's going to work for us. And we'd really hoped to do Vita 2, but unfortunately, we had never like we never built for that sort of performance target from the start. And when we looked at it, we're like, oh man, this is going to be an enormous job. And so it hasn't happened, unfortunately.
Are you guys still looking into doing a Vita version, or is that kind of just off the table now?
Well, I mean, we'd love to, but you know, like we also need to pay the rent and things like that. So, but who knows? Like, hopefully, maybe the PlayStation 4 release will pleasantly surprise us, and we'll have some budget to do some more ports or something. We'll
How's
see.
it been performing so far?
A little on the disappointing side, unfortunately. I mean, it's not like disastrously bad or anything like that, but I think we were hoping for a little bit better. I've kind of come to the conclusion that if you're making a puzzle platformer, it's a pretty tough market these days. And there are not a lot of puzzle platformers that have released sort of 2014 or newer that have really made much money, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think choosing PlayStation might have been the problem as well? Because I know a lot of people that we've talked to on this show, they say that they're surprised by how badly their sales on PlayStation are compared to other platforms. And a lot of them think that the PlayStation Network is kind of getting like a Steam issue where there's just too much coming out.
I mean, so my only point of comparison is the PS4 versus Steam, so PSN versus Steam. And I would say that PSN's like discoverability and visibility features aren't great. Where, you know, it's not like new games aren't prominently featured on like the PlayStation dashboard or something like that. And you know, it's you've got to dig quite a bit before you even see new releases, let alone games that came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I think that's certainly an issue that hurts like those kind of organic sales. Like there's sales that you drive yourself, right? There's sales that people have heard of Life Goes On and they're excited about it and they say, oh, it's on PlayStation. I'm going to go to the store and find it. And then there's sales that are driven by the platform. You know, you're on the shelf and people are browsing and they see your game on the shelf is sort of the analogy. And I think that PS, I think I'm a little disappointed in how PSN's visibility is organized and how like just how hard it is to see games and have and put games in front of people.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of the PlayStation Store. Like, I liked the initial store on PlayStation 3, and then they changed it to whatever laggy piece of garbage it is now.
Yeah.
The Vita is decent, but it seems to be getting worse. The PlayStation 4, I think, is just the storefront is terrible because it is so hard to find things on there.
Yeah, and it doesn't make for a compelling experience. And like you say, like if it's something that's like laggy and painful to use, then people aren't going to go to it to say, "Oh, what's new?" or "What's cool?" or you know, they're like, "No, it's laggy and painful, so I'm going to stay away from it." And
Yeah.
so gonna spend as much money on downloadable games.
It seems like every time I go to the PlayStation Store, it's like five or six categories of like featured and promo and advertising and Hot Pockets and Call of Duty, Destiny, exclusives. It's like, just let me see what the fuck came out this week. How hard is it to let me look at what you're selling?
And their system for prioritizing that seems super strange. Like, so the day that we released, there were seven other games released that day. And I think so that seems like kind of a high number compared to historically how this thing goes. And I think that's, but on the other hand, that was about it for that week, right? Whereas on any given day on Steam, there's 20 new games.
And yeah.
the day after, there's another 20 games. And so there's a big difference there still in terms of like how kind of flooded the store is.
Yeah.
But something that was really weird is like Sony's got these like four little front page slots on the store to feature new content and that sort of thing. And it was like the day we launched, we were really hoping like, oh, like maybe we'll get really lucky and get one of those four, you know, four spots for new games. I mean, there's only seven games being released, right? But it was Sony had like four pre-orders that they put in that slot, and like one was for like the deluxe edition of one of the other games. So it was like game A, deluxe edition of game A, game B, game C, and they were all pre-orders and none of them were new releases. I was like,
that's wow. Just ass backwards to me,
right? Yeah, and that's unfortunate because that is very, very valuable space that Sony seems to be really underutilizing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, of course, from my perspective, I'm like, of course I'm complaining because like I want that space. I want those eyeballs. I want that reach. Or those.
Hey, it makes sense to me. Like even as a consumer, when I go to games after passing by everything else, I go to games and then I have to find new releases and then I have to scroll all the way to the end to just look at the list of new releases.
Yeah.
The top 9 or 12 items are all pre-orders. Like I right. want to look at the new stuff, not the stuff that's not out.
Yeah. But
I don't know. Sony, they'll just do whatever the hell they want because they're in the lead anyway, so they don't.
Yeah, they're not exactly hurting. So,
have you guys considered doing either like Wii U or Xbox One releases or ports of the game?
You know, it's the same. It's the same as the Vita. It would be easier, but still, you know, it'd still be a significant effort. And I'm not convinced that the market is. Like maybe visibility would be better. Maybe there is a better opportunity there. Maybe hard to say. Maybe we got unlucky and made the wrong choice with the PlayStation 4. I'm not sure, but it's really hard to know if the effort would pay off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it would be awesome. We'll have to make a little bit more money before we can seriously consider it.
I hear. I have to ask because our show, we are historically an Xbox affiliated show. Like that,
Xbox crowd.
We are an Xbox. Like I love my Xbox One, my PlayStation 4. I curse it weekly. Mm-hmm. I've had a bad history with it, and people they still ask me why I still own one, and it's games that you can only get on there that keep me playing. Like I wouldn't have played Life Goes On if I didn't have a PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
Because I'm not much of a PC guy, but I will always prefer Xbox. The controller's better in my eyes. I think people appreciate releases on Xbox a lot more than they've been appreciating on PlayStation as well. Every time they announce games with gold or new releases on the Sony blog, there's people complaining, oh, great, another 2D platformer.
Yeah.
They can't just appreciate what they're getting and enjoy what they're getting.
Yeah.
Then I guess that's just kids today.
Oh, reading comments on the internet is always going to be a hazardous endeavor, you know? Like,
God damn, kids got to get off my lawn. Oh, man.
And it was sort of interesting with the timing for that because when we were talking to Sony, we were kind of, I can't remember exactly what the times were, but when we first started talking to industry people, it was right around the transition from like the Xbox One, the PS4 hadn't launched yet, but everybody knew they were coming.
Yeah.
And things changed a lot for indie developers in that time frame, particularly from Microsoft's perspective, where to do like Xbox 360 live arcade game, you had to have a publisher or sign with Microsoft Studios as a publisher, and that was the only way to release a game on the Xbox 360. There was no really true indie marketplace. No, that's not true. What was it called?
They had the Xbox Live Indie Store, but that was just a wasteland of garbage.
Exactly. And there was no middle ground there, right?
Yeah.
And Microsoft changed that and changed their approach with Xbox One. But we sort of like kind of just missed that. We were talking to Microsoft a little too early, and you know they hadn't really made that transition yet, and then I don't know, we just never really connected with them again after that, and so that's how we ended up on the PS4.
I understand. Hey, it happens. Mm-hmm. Have you guys considered talking with Microsoft or Nintendo again for either a port of this or for any new projects that come along?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, like, now that we have a bit of experience for what it's like to do work on console, we have got a much better handle on what's involved with it. And I think in future work, we would be less shy about doing multiple platforms simultaneously. Particularly, we were working with Unity, and that makes things easier. It doesn't solve all your problems, but it certainly simplifies the like cross-platform development problem.
So that's good. At least, hopefully, future titles we'll be able to see them on multiple consoles.
Yeah.
And maybe the Vita.
That would be cool.
Hey, if you're going for all the systems, you gotta aim for the N-Gage, the Tiger R Zone. You can't forget that Virtual Boy, Master System. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, if you're gonna go big, go big.
Go everywhere. Yeah, the Sega Dreamcast needs new releases.
They do. Don't they still get new releases in Japan? Yeah.
I don't know about like really serious commercial releases, but there is actually like a pretty active indie scene for the Dreamcast.
Yeah, because you can, it's like crazy.
Yeah, well, the cool thing about the Dreamcast is you can like just burn your own CD and like put it in the drive and it'll play. Like, you don't have to deal with like special authoring tools, and you don't have to have like a modded Dreamcast to be able to like play, you know, burnt CD games or whatever.
Yeah.
Which arguably maybe is part of what killed the Dreamcast, as it was too easy to pirate for. But on the other hand, makes it this fantastic indie developer platform where like all you need to do to make a Dreamcast game is like a Dreamcast and a PC, and you know, and you can do a CD burner. Yeah, it's super easy. Whereas like, oh, you want to run your indie game on a modern console, that's a lot harder. And so that's something that's kind of interesting too, that Microsoft has announced and Microsoft is working on, is like opening up the Xbox One for just like easier development, so you don't have to be licensed and approved.
Aren't the retail systems, don't they double as dev kits now? I believe they enable that.
So I think it's not super simple. Like, I think if you're not licensed, you can use it as a sort of basic dev kit where you only have access to like half the RAM and you can't access quite all the features, but you can still like get your code running on it, which is pretty cool and better than the alternatives. And then I think once you do have a full license, you can effectively use a retail Xbox One as a dev kit. That's my understanding. I don't really have any experience with it though.
Hey, I'm sure it's enough to make a match 3 puzzle game, right?
Totally, yeah. If you like, hey, look, I've got my game running on the Xbox One. How cool is that?
I think that'd be pretty cool.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's super neat from my perspective to be like, look, my game's on the PS4. Like, how about that? That's, you know.
Yeah, I think that's some of my favorite stuff to hear doing interviews on this show, are just the people who are excited to say, you know, I grew up a gamer and now I can tell my friends I have a game on the PlayStation, or I have a game on the Wii U. I have a game on the Xbox One.
Totally. And
they can just feel such a sense of accomplishment knowing that they made a game that other people can play.
Yeah, it's really neat.
And then Metacritic shits all over it. 4 out of 10.
So true.
Not enough blood.
Yeah.
So did you guys ever consider making Life Goes On an M-rated game with copious amounts of gore when you would hit saw blades or land on spikes, just over the top?
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because, like, you know, some of the influences of the game that we talked about at the game jam were games like Limbo, which is sort of subtly gory, but is kind of still pretty graphic in its violence. Like, you know, like the violence in Limbo is like, you kind of feel bad for that little boy when he gets impaled on those spikes, right? It's like, oh, that's kind of awful.
Those bear traps.
Yeah. It's just like, there's a bit of a cringe there with that kind of visceral, like, oh, that hurt. Like, that's, you know.
A spider jamming its claw through him. Ugh.
Totally. Yeah.
And now I want to play Limbo again.
It's a great game, yeah. And another game that we talked about a lot, too, was Super Meat Boy, which has, you know, like, pixelated meat blood splatters, you know, coating the level everywhere, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, certainly the idea of doing something like that with Life Goes On was never like really foreign, but I can't even really say how we came to the decision to take it like cartoony. I think that part of it, or at least it kind of evolved to like, we're doing this sort of really grim thing where, you know, you're intentionally killing these knights. You're intentionally, you know, it's not exactly suicide, but you're like sacrificing these knights. You're having these knights sacrifice themselves.
Not like, suicide, it's genocide.
Yeah. It's all just a matter of scale. So so I think that we wanted to like balance that really dark kind of morbid topic, that dark morbid kind of gameplay with this more kind of goofy, cartoony, surreal kind of visual. And so that's how it came what it is.
Oh, there you go. For the Xbox port, if you do it, I know they like having exclusive content, having an ultra violence mode where it's just blood gushes everywhere, and then a happy mode where when you land on the spikes, instead of blood shooting everywhere, it's just like flowers and rainbows.
Rainbows, yeah.
Could take a page out of Diablo's playbook.
Yeah.
Or unicorns and
Team Fortress 2 with the microvision or whatever. Yeah. And that's actually like an interesting question too, like looking back on it, like how would it have marketed differently if it was that sort of game, if it was kind of a more like gory, like bloody game, like would people have reacted to it differently? I don't know. I mean, right now we have like a lot of kids that like the game and, you know, parents that say, oh yeah, my kids think this is great. But would the broader, I think for Steam, there's some truth. There's some like perception that the Steam marketplace responds better to kind of more mature content. And I wonder if that would have been true for the larger like marketplace as well. Hard to know.
Hey, you could have gone the hatred route and just like murdered civilians everywhere. They're not knights trying to serve a purpose. You're just throwing just civilians.
Innocent bystanders.
Yeah. So where did you guys show off the game? I'm guessing that you brought it to conventions, trade shows, stuff like that.
Yeah. So we did our first kind of broader exposure to the world was we did the Indie Mega Booth at PAX in Seattle in 2013. That was super cool because that was our kind of first experience with kind of the industry, like meeting a lot of other game developers, meeting a lot of other indie developers, meeting press, meeting industry people, meeting like people from Sony and from Nintendo and from Microsoft. And also just, you know, having huge crowds of people play the game and check out the game. We had a lot of fun with that first convention too, where we took a giant wooden box with us, and in the middle of our giant wooden box we had a microphone and we had a tube on the top, and we would get people to like scream into the tube. And so that's how we like recorded the death sounds for all of the knights in the game.
That is fantastic.
Yeah. So we had a ton of fun with that. That was really cool. A year later, we were back at PAX in Seattle because they featured us as one of the PAX 10 games that year. So that was one of the awards that we got. So that was really cool. And then this last fall, Sony invited us to PSX, the PlayStation Experience event in San Francisco.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was really cool too. And then we've done like a few local things around Edmonton as well.
You guys ever consider going to MAGFest?
MAGFest. I don't know MAGFest.
That is the music and gaming festival in Baltimore Harbor, Maryland.
Okay.
They've in recent years they've added like an indie section to their game room, and they've been bringing a lot of cool games and indies down there to show off.
Yeah. Sounds really cool. And I think it's like kind of a growing trend in these conventions where you see like, you know, these like indie kind of takeovers, like huge crowds of indie like games. And I think that audiences are responding pretty well to that. I think that people are pretty interested. I know like it's not for everyone. A lot of people only play like AAA games, but it's it's cool to see that, you know, that there is this like rising indie scene.
Yeah, I love indie games because, you know, I'm getting older. I don't have the time to sit down and play a 200-hour RPG epic anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't have the attention span for that. So yeah. I like smaller indie titles where I could sit down, play it for a day or two, get through it, enjoy it, and and move on and just
Experience something new or different or cool and see what it has to offer and then like finish it. And yeah, it's nice to be able to finish games as an adult, right?
It's a rarity anymore to be like, wow, those are end credits and I didn't just select credits in the options menu.
Yeah.
I get to see the people who made the game and sometimes I get to talk to you guys on the show.
Although it's funny because sometimes they'll say like, oh yeah, a little indie game, and then I'll spend, you know, hundreds of hours playing something like, I don't know, Binding of Isaac or FTL or something like that.
Rocket League.
Yeah, yeah, super high replayability.
And I love Isaac. We'll spend the rest of this show talking about Binding of Isaac.
I'm sure no one's ever done that before, right?
Hey, I'm amazed that we're talking about your game as much as we have. Some of our shows go off the rails really quick. I guess that's one of the perks to just talking with me is that things stay a lot more focused instead of getting off topic super quick. So what games are you playing right now? Like, what are you enjoying in your spare time? What are you looking forward to?
Oh man, I don't know. I guess I've had a few weeks to recover. I'm actually still in a little bit of a daze from, you know, the whole like insanity with development and shipping the game. I played a bunch of it before. I put it down. I picked up Crypt of the Necrodancer again.
Nice.
Yeah, lots of fun with that. I tend to like the whole roguelike thing. I just finished TIS 100. Are you familiar with it?
No.
I guess if you particularly if you're a console gamer, this one would not be on your radar. It's this really weird. It's almost a puzzle game, but it's actually not really a puzzle game. It's basically like a computer programming game where it's like this fake computer from the 80s that you have to repair by writing little like assembly language programs for it. And I don't know, it was strangely addictive and I spent way too many hours on it. It was lots of fun.
I'll have to look that one up. You said TIS 100?
Yeah, it is. It is the like most like basically it's like the developers are like, yeah, here's the 9-page PDF printed off and like learn how to program. Have fun, you know, like
computer programming the video game.
Basically, yeah, yeah. it's pretty neat. What else? I don't know. I've got this like giant backlog of like Humble Bundle purchases that I need to like work through.
Oh god. There's another new Humble Bundle out today.
I saw that.
Keeping my eye on that one.
There's a couple titles in there I was interested in.
I've lucked out where the past two of them were like a Ubisoft bundle that I didn't care about because I don't like Uplay.
Right.
And now there's a bunch of stuff I actually care about, so I might have to grab another Humble Bundle.
Like, oh, that was on my wish list, and that was on my wish list, so I guess I'm getting 10 more games in my library now. Yeah.
Do you do the Humble Monthly Bundle at all?
I'm not subscribed, and it seems like I alternate month to month from like cursing myself for not subscribing and saying, well, I guess I wouldn't have gotten that much out of this bundle, so...
I'm interested in that Way Forward game that just came out in the newest monthly bundle. Cat Girl Without Salad or something like that.
Yeah. That was like a little like kind of that's a little like prototype one or something. Kind of bundle exclusive. Yeah, I've heard it looks pretty crazy. I haven't checked it out. But
I know they were streaming it on the composer Jake Kaufman, his Twitch channel. They were streaming it the other night and it looks batshit insane.
Yeah.
And he's an awesome composer anyway. He did one of the alternate new soundtracks for Crypt of the Necrodancer as well.
Right.
Which that game in general, just holy god, the soundtrack in Necrodancer is insane.
So good. And then like I guess there's like five different variants on it now.
Yeah.
And all five variants are awesome to listen to.
I forget who all they were. I know Vert did one, A Rival.
Yeah.
God, there's just so many of them.
Danny Baranowski is the original. Family Jewel, something like that, is like the heavy metal one. And then there's the disco sort of new wave one. Oh, who did that? I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. All of it.
I think I have the Danny Baranowski stuff, A Rival, Family Jewels, and Verts.
Verts, yeah. You're missing one. I can't remember what it's called.
I need to get Danny back on this show. He's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, he's got some really iconic soundtracks for really iconic games.
Yeah, Binding of Isaac, Super Meat Boy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know Super Meat Boy on the PlayStation, the re-release, got rid of his soundtrack because I guess a falling out between him and Team Meat. And
oh, no.
It's just not the same game without his music.
Tragic. Wow, that's crazy.
They got a new soundtrack for it, and I guess it's okay, but it's not
gonna
Super
be
Meat Boy.
Super hard to live up to the original, right?
Seriously, he's just so good.
Yeah, definitely.
So who did you get for the music in your game?
Yeah, so our game, the soundtrack is composed by a guy named Kevin Greenlee. He also, I think, goes by Loudcore online sometimes. The other big releases that he did was... there's a couple of PC MMO sort of games, Starforge and Reign of Kings. He did their soundtracks as well.
Damn, sounds busy.
Yeah. It was funny. We this was a few years ago, and I got this random email from this guy, and I think he was pretty young at the time. I think he was 17 when he first emailed me.
Oh wow!
And he's like, "Hey, I saw your demo. We had a playable demo online for a while, and he sent this message, and he's like, "Oh, I saw your demo, and I think it's really cool, and I'd love to compose music for your, because I noticed you didn't have any music, and here's a little track that I threw together for this sort of music that I think would be really good for your game." And he included this MP3, and it was just blew our minds with how good it was. It's like, okay, I guess we're gonna give you money now. And it's been great working with him the whole time.
What was your initial thought when just some random guy emailed you like, "Hey, I want to do music in your game"?
Well, it had actually happened a few times. Once we started putting out a demo that didn't have any music, and composers started to say, "Oh, we're interested." But we really had no idea kind of what we wanted or what we thought would fit or how to communicate what we thought would be good or anything like that. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know anything about making music. And so it was actually super helpful to have this guy be like, "Here's a track that I just made that I think would be really good for your game." And we were like, "You are dead on right. This would be
nailed it."
Yeah, totally. And it's in a way it's kind of too bad for because there's lots of composers out there. There's lots of people who would say, "Oh, I'd love to, I love music, I love games, I'd love to make video game music." And I would hate to say the right way to get a job, making video game music, is to just do work for free and start sending it out. That's pretty awful. But I don't think that's, the right thing to do in general, but it's certainly what worked for us for finding a composer that we thought was, doing the right thing for our soundtrack.
You said he was 17 when he first contacted you?
I think he was.
Did you need to get his parents' permission to let him work on the game?
No. maybe we should have. I'm not sure. But
have the parents sign the contract, "Yes, we approve of this"?
Totally.
That's crazy, though. Mm-hmm. So how big was the team that made the game?
So the initial release of Life Goes On was four of us plus a bunch of help from some contractors, the composer and various other contractors and friends and that sort of thing. And then the newer release, Done to Death, there's been three of us in the core team working on it.
And are all you guys from the initial game jam?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Has anyone kind of dropped out of the project or bring new people in?
Yeah, so our original
any game, filthy quitters on the team?
no, not like that. Things team size has changed, and the various different contractors and people we have helped us out has changed, and it's kind of surprising because people say, "Oh, three of you made this game and brought it to PlayStation 4," and it's well, three of us kind of right now on the core team, yeah, but if you look at the credits, the list of names is really quite long. An awful lot of people contributed to this, even a small indie game made by three people, the actual credits list is much longer than that.
It's going to be like that. People just come in and out, testers and all that other fun stuff.
Yeah, contributing like different aspects, or it's like, oh, we're, you know, we want to release the game and we're behind on art, you know, who can we get to help out with some art or, you know, anything like that, right?
Did you guys do a Kickstarter or anything?
No, we didn't.
Okay, so you didn't have 4,000 Kickstarter backers to toss in the credits.
No, we don't have the mile-long credits.
I love some of those, and even better when you can't skip the credits, you have to just scroll through the whole fucking thing.
Forever.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yep.
Crazy, absolutely crazy. So what is next for you guys?
I don't know. Still a little bit of like catching
nap
recovery. Yeah,
nap, just nap for a couple another months or two, and
like release was a couple of weeks ago, just about 3 weeks ago, and my apartment is still a giant mess. Like I've started to catch up on chores and like all of those things that I've been putting off for years now. That's happening, but yeah, it's a lot.
Have you guys considered doing any kind of retail release? I know like Limited Run Games, they put out limited physical print copies of games, or who's the one who's been partnering up with like Shovel Knight and Shantae is getting physical releases.
There's also the box, loot box, loot crate or something like that.
They do
physical packages and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a super cool concept, and it's something that's been on our like, we should look at that after we release. And so now it's just sort of that sort of thing is kind of starting to like come onto our radar. And yeah, I don't know. It would be really cool to have a Life Goes On box. So then it's just a question of like, you know, is there a market for that, and is there a partner that wants to work on that?
So if you were going to make a Life Goes On collector's edition for one of those limited release websites, what would be in your collector's edition?
Okay, so obviously like, you know, the full game, and we have PC, Mac, and we have Windows, Mac, and Linux builds. So there's that. Kevin's soundtrack is awesome, and a like soundtrack CD as well as MP3s and stuff like that I think would be great to go in there. I think an art book would be cool, although it's not something we really have ready to go. It'd be quite a bit of work to pull that together, but just kind of showing that evolution, like you were saying, like here's what our art looked like 4 years ago, here's what that same level or those same screenshots look like now. I think that's really cool stuff to see. I know we still have, you know, you were saying like, oh, it'd be cool to see the old builds and that sort of thing. I think we still have some old like demo builds kicking around. Maybe it'd
be that would be cool.
Bundle those up and say, look, here's this like crazy old demo that we released. I think my favorite one, if I could have it, is so you've played the game, you've met Jeff.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I think a Jeff plushie would be my like ultimate like, you know, collector's edition, like Goes On bundle swag. Yeah.
What was the inspiration for Jeff? What made you include just a tiny little black monster that eats you once and then that's it?
Well, so like, you know, we're building these levels and we're building these like this puzzle platformer, and we wanted to like expand out on the formula a little bit. And, okay, what do you do in these levels? What are you doing in the game? And you know, we had this idea that like, you know, like Super Meat Boy has the bandage, right? The like the little like collectible that's kind of extra hard to get.
Yeah.
And we thought, well, okay, we need some sort of like collectible widget sort of thing in our game to add a little bit more, you know, make things a little more interesting. And so we're thinking about that and saying, okay, well, what fits thematically? What, you know, like what are you collecting in the game that's this bonus side thing? And we thought, well, in our game, like everything kills you, so it would make sense that the bonus collectible has to kill you. And so yeah. And so this is where the little furry, the hungry little, you know, black furball that eats you when you walk up to him and then falls asleep came from.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And so then for a long time, we were sort of calling him like the widget because we didn't actually have a name and we were like kind of desperate for a name. And so in the end, finally, we said, okay, fine, it's Jeff because we don't have a name. So
I was going to ask if there's a reason that you picked Jeff.
No, just because it was, I don't know, we thought it was funny that it was like this like short, simple, like common name that, you know, didn't have any meaning or anything like that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I think that's a fun addition to the game. I also need to thank you for making it so you don't need to meet the death goal, the time goal, and get Jeff all in the same run.
Yeah, no.
Because I've been playing a lot of the game Not a Hero lately, and their goals, you need to get all three in one run for it to one count.
Right.
So every time a game lets me do one at a time, sure, I got to play the level three times, but I don't have to drive myself insane trying to get all the goals in one shot.
Yeah. And it's, well, in Life Goes On, too, it's like kind of a trade-off there where it's like, okay, I want to finish the level in the fewest possible deaths, but I also want to feed Jeff, and well, you know, Jeff kills you, so they're kind of goals in conflict there too, right?
Are the levels designed so that you could still feed Jeff and beat the goal?
So there's sort of two layers of goals in our game. There's like the purple challenges, which are like the stated challenges, and then there's kind of secret minimum challenges. And to get the gold, yeah, you can, every level you can feed Jeff and still get the gold, whereas the like secret purple challenge death counts and that sort of thing, no, you have to do it without feeding Jeff.
Is there a purple for the time or just for the deaths?
There is a purple for the time.
Oh, and
it is really only there for the most like insane completionists, because I mean, I almost feel like I need to apologize for those times.
You guys are dicks.
Yeah, a little bit.
I got a couple of the purple medals for deaths, but I have never seen one for time. Yeah. I was just thinking maybe it's only there for deaths. Maybe they're
there.
Not it's, one for you guys are just assholes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, gotta love it. Gotta fucking love it. Do you think you guys made the game too hard? Do you think that might be holding people back from wanting to get too far into the game?
It's really hard to know, right? Because it's such a like player dependent thing. Where like what one player will just blast through in minutes will like completely stump someone else for hours. And that's a mix of like, do you play a lot of puzzle games? And it also can be just a factor of like, sometimes you just have to have that aha moment. And some days that aha moment just eludes you. So difficulty curve on a puzzle game is a really tricky thing. And I think this is something that a lot of puzzle games try to get around to some extent by having like one of the things in Life Goes On is that you have this fixed level progression. You have to complete level one before you can try level two.
Yeah.
And in some ways that maybe does make it a little harder, because if you get stuck on level one, well then you're just not seeing level two.
Yeah.
Whereas other games like, you know, like The Witness is obviously the biggest example right now, has this much more open world exploration. Try one thing, then try something else. And didn't like that one? Okay, go back and come back to it later. And so, like, I think that we're pretty gentle for the first world in terms of our progression and our difficulty curve, but I certainly know like it's not perfect and there are spots that people get stuck at. And I don't know, maybe there is some element of like people bouncing off the game, trying it and getting stuck and not liking it. But at least when I read like kind of critical reviews and user comments and that sort of thing, it's usually not too much. And actually, in fact, on the initial release of Life Goes On, we heard the opposite, actually. Some people would say, oh, the progression was perfect. The difficulty curve was like great. Other people, I think maybe more hardcore puzzle people, would say, oh, it was, you know, a little easy. I was hoping it was going to get harder and that sort of thing. And so then in Done to Death, we've introduced the optional challenge levels, and in World 4 and the final world, which is all new in Done to Death, the complexity and the logic sort of requirements and that sort of thing don't go too crazy, but they do sort of step up from where they were in the previous worlds.
Well, I gave the game good marks on our show. I really enjoyed it. I had a blast with it. I know there's some of the trophies I will never in my life get in this game. Although yeah. I have tried so many times to get the trophy of fitting like 26 people in the first level.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
It is tricky.
And that, and then another trophy for fitting one more.
One more, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's doable. It's I don't know. Some of our trophies, I like, I don't know. I'm torn between kind of like wanting to apologize to players because it's like, oh, maybe that was a little bit of a dick move. But on the other hand, like kind of cackling in glee at player tears for like the, like, you know, like, I have given you a challenge. Are you worthy sort of thing, you know, like.
I like that. I like when developers make games that you can't just beat in an hour and get a platinum or get all the trophies or whatever.
Yeah.
It's fun to make people work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And at least you thought of interesting trophies to put in the game. It wasn't just beat this level, beat this level, beat this level, beat the game on hard. Yeah. You put fun stuff in there.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. Part of that maybe comes from like the history of it. Like, because, you know, when we were originally doing it, as looking at Steam achievements, we just thought, well, what do we think is interesting? What do we think is funny? What do we think is neat? What do you think is like going to give players something extra that's fun to do? Whereas I think Sony's, like, they don't really give you hard and fast rules, but kind of their guidance, or at least the trend on the Sony platform, is that trophies do kind of come from this, like, you beat level one, congratulations, here's a bronze trophy. You know, you beat world one, here's a silver trophy. Like, that seems to be kind of the trend and kind of the typical approach. But I don't know, we thought it was a lot more interesting to do the weird and zany stuff.
Yeah, I like it. I like that approach. It's good to have achievements that set yourself apart and aren't just the same old trophies.
Trophies, achievements, yeah.
I'm an Xbox. I told you I'm an Xbox guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know we're creeping up on close to an hour here. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with the game?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing in particular. I mean,
the floor is yours. Game. Are there any subjects you would like to discuss?
Man,
how's the weather?
The weather, it's pretty warm in Edmonton.
It's nice. It's been hot as balls lately.
It's all right.
Just
recently acquired an air conditioner, and I'm afraid of what it's going to do to my power bill, but I'm appreciating the cold air.
It's worth every penny, trust me.
Yeah.
when you can actually go to sleep and not just be drenched from sweat.
And yeah, not falling asleep, definitely.
I love the cold weather over the heat. I mean, if you're cold, you could always get a blanket. If it's hot, you can only take off so much before it gets illegal.
And then you just suffer. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if there's anything else you want to talk about. Normally, this is where I would go into news with my co-hosts, but they're not here. So do you want to join me for some news?
Well, let me, you know, I actually did think of one more thing. Something I wanted to touch on back when you were talking about kind of the game developer thing and the game jam thing and that sort of thing. And so if you want to take a minute, I had a thought on that.
Absolutely. Bring it on.
This came up when we were at PAX the second time around, and we were sort of participating in some panels being part of PAX 10. And so a lot of it was this panel format where it would be a bunch of the game developers from the PAX 10 and the audience just asking questions. And it seemed like, you know, and people would ask like, oh, like, where did you come up with your ideas? Oh, how did you meet your team? Oh, how do you find other like-minded people in your area who are interested in game development? Oh, how did you actually finish something that you could show off to people? All these questions about people who are interested in getting into game development themselves kept coming up. And the answer would invariably be between all of these teams, like, would be, well, go to a game jam. And that was seemed like the universal question for like, oh, hey, I want to get into like making video games. How do I do that? And the answer was go to a game jam.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there a website that you could like look up to find out where game jams are going to be?
Oh, you know, I'm sure there are. I mean, Global Game Jam is a big one. Then another one, this one's a little tricky, but the Ludum Dare, LudumDare.com. They run one every like 3 months or something like that, and there's like local meetups for them and that sort of thing.
Nice.
And then I'm sure there's a ton of other ones out there, but those are the two that are kind of pretty high profile.
Nice.
Yeah.
So for people listening, if you want to make your own games, go to a game jam. You might get teamed up with Infinite Monkeys.
Go to a game jam. Yeah.
Which, by the way, where did you get the name Infinite Monkeys? Because that is a great name.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, I don't know. We didn't like, I'm not sure exactly where it came from, but it was, you know, the whole like, you know, enough monkeys typing on enough typewriters will eventually come up with like the complete works of William Shakespeare or whatever, or maybe, you know, like the ultimate indie video game. I'm not sure.
Hey, that works. So yeah. You're just a bunch of monkeys making video games, huh?
That's right. That's right.
So, were you interested in joining me for a handful of news today?
Sounds good.
I know I only have a handful of things because we did an episode last night that covered most of the news, but today, a lot of rumors going around about Bethesda and their E3 lineup. Have you heard any of this stuff?
I have not been paying attention.
The rumors of their lineup are so far Wolfenstein 2, The Evil Within 2, a revamped and recreated Prey 2, then a Skyrim remaster.
Wow.
Which, if that is a true lineup, I will probably get all four of those. I thought I've lost enough of my soul onto Skyrim, but bring it on. Fuck it. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, interesting that it's not a new Elder Scrolls, like...
Well, I know they said when they were getting Elder Scrolls Online, or no, for Fallout 4, one of their exercises was to port Skyrim onto the new hardware as just a developmental exercise.
Right.
So maybe they're taking what they did and thinking, hey, we could get another $50 out of this. I'm back in. I don't care.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, yeah, once you've invested that work, like, makes sense.
Maybe they'll release another dragon statue I could put next to my other one. I like my collector's edition. So if you guys make a Life Goes On with a Jeff plushie, I'm sure I'll grab that one too.
You're in. Awesome.
XCOM 2 was announced today that it's coming to consoles this September. So that is exciting for PlayStation, Xbox owners.
Definitely.
Are you an XCOM fan?
Yeah, so good. So good. I played like the original old school, like 90s version, and really liked the updates as well.
I heard the new one is really, really good. So I'm excited to see that's coming to consoles.
Yeah.
Three new titles are available for the Xbox One backward compatibility program. Nothing huge this time, but Anomaly Warzone Earth, Lazy Raiders, and Aqua. So, you know, they're just getting all the huge titles out before E3 rolls around. I think at E3 they're going to drop like, hey, Red Dead is out, Mass Effect 2 and 3 are out, Lost Odysseys. I think they're going to just drop a truckload of big titles available.
While the press is paying attention. Yeah,
that makes sense. Which, that'd be smart. And maybe people will shut up if we finally get Skate 3 backward compatible. And then the last bit of news I have is that it is basically confirmed that Injustice 2 is happening.
Nice.
So if fighting game fans out there, you have another Mortal Kombat-ish DC brawler to look forward to. I think... posters from GameStop leaked online for a pre-order bonus, and then Ed Boon just tweeted out like one of those like slash emojis that's just like the guy shrugging.
So, it's basically confirmed then, right?
Yeah, it's like, well, you caught us.
yeah cool.
But yeah, that's basically all the news I had, because we ran through a lot of it on our other show for the week, which isn't going to be out until Friday, because yay for recording out of order. But
did you say Wolfenstein 2? Is that one of the ones that you said is?
Yeah, Wolfenstein 2.
Cool. That'll be neat.
Yeah, that should be fun, because I loved the recent Wolfenstein. Was it New Order and the Old Blood?
Yeah, I didn't play Old Blood, but I have New Order.
Yeah, those are good games.
Yeah.
Gorgeous game. So I'm excited to see what they could do with the Wolfenstein universe.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, between Wolfenstein and the new Doom release, they seem to be sort of doing this like, yeah, we're just going to do the kind of classic FPS thing. We're not going to do the modern FPS conventions. We're going to, you know, make games the way we made FPSs, you know, 15 years ago or whatever.
What do you think will be the next shooter that they bring back? Quake?
Quake? Yeah, is the world ready for a new Quake? Maybe.
Let's go with Hexen. What are some obscure ones that they put out?
Yeah, Heretic. I don't know. Blood. Do you remember Blood?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
We just need the most obscure shit to come back. We're like, why? Why? Like, do we need a new Commander Keen? Like, really?
Well,
no lie, I would buy the fuck out of a new Commander Keen.
Probably, yeah, yeah. I wonder, is the Duke Nukem name dead? Is it like too beaten into the ground to be redeemed, or will they try to make a new Duke Nukem?
Who knows?
Hard to say.
They got to hook up with Telltale and make a Duke Nukem adventure game.
Yes.
Just confuse everyone.
For sure.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's about all I have to talk about on this show. I'm not sure if there's anything else that you want to talk about.
No, that sounds good to me.
Well, Eric, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. The game is fantastic. Where can people keep up to date on you and the games you put out, and fingers crossed, the Xbox port of like
goes on. Yeah. Our best sorts of news is our Twitter feed. If you just hit our website, lifegoesongame.com, and we've got links to our Twitter and our Facebook pages there.
Awesome. We normally end the show with music every week. Is the soundtrack for Life Goes On available online?
Yeah, you can hit Kevin's Bandcamp page. If you actually go to the website, there's a link on the website.
Awesome. So I'll play some Life Goes On music. Does that sound good to you?
Sounds great.
Or would you prefer Crypt of the Necrodancer?
Also fantastic. So I'll leave that in your hands.
I'll mix it up. I'll play some of both.
Sounds good.
Well, Eric, again, it was a pleasure having you on. Be sure to come back anytime you want. Just let me know. We're always happy to talk to people again.
Yeah.
Do you have any final words to end the show?
No, just thanks so much for having me here. And it was lots of fun.
you.